It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as always, live in the studio, so that if you feel like talking to us, we'll make it as easy as humanly possible. Just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. If you are reluctant to put your voice on air, which you shouldn't be because we don't bite, at least not often, and you can email us at any time at info@vanweefinancial, and Adam checks in on that once in a while. So if you have a question that you want to put in that way, which you, if loyal listeners will remember, happened to us last week, because last week the internet in this whole building was down and we have VoIP telephone lines, which meant no telephone.
Yep,
well, it's there today.
Also told they couldn't pick up any streaming of the show, so tune in radio didn't work.
No, kind of things. My research department had to actually hunt up an old radio and listen to it.
Did you have to go to the car?
No, actually, we keep one around because you never know when you're going to need it.
It's right next to your rotary telephone, I would imagine.
Oh, it's by my record player.
Exactly.
That's, you guys remember, we always put the kids to bed and left the record player on, right? I'm not going there. That's political, and we're not. Well, we are, but we're not here to be political. We are here to talk about your money, and boy, is there a lot of your money to talk about right now. Had another up week in the market. It wasn't one of those blowout weeks that you're going to remember for the rest of your life, but the point is it's going up again, and there are good, solid reasons behind it, and we will talk about some of those today. There's some absolutely remarkable things going on economically, and the stories that you will hear in the media would lead you to believe that the opposite is true. So when you want to really know what's going on, I just suggest tuning into WBOB at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning and get an hour's worth of the absolute truth, because we dig way, way, way deeper than the headlines to get the actual news of what's going on. And I personally am not surprised that it happens, but it disappoints us because it puts so much fear into the hearts of people everywhere. And a lot of people are getting scared away from the market. And, man, are they missing out on this?
Yeah, that's true. It's been nothing short of remarkable, actually. I'll talk about that in a bit.
5 months since this whole thing hit with the virus.
Yeah.
And Adam will fill us in, but look where we are.
Thursday marked 100 days since the market bottom. So we'll talk about that in a bit.
Yes, we will, because there's a great number attached to that one.
No doubt, no doubt. But this week, you're right, the indexes, they posted modest gains. The Dow made up a little bit of lost ground again on the other two indexes in a repeat of last week. The large cap index posted a weekly gain of 1.8, while the S&P added 0.6%, and the NASDAQ was slightly weaker at 0.1. August has been a pretty strong month, with the Dow posting back-to-back weekly gains, which totaled 5.7%. Not too bad. The Dow is, however, the only index still negative on the year. It's down just 2.1%, though, which is still pretty remarkable considering where it was about 101 days ago.
We are not far from establishing a new high.
No, not far at all. The S&P is now up 4.4% for the year, and the NASDAQ is up, it's hard to even believe, but it's up 22.8% for the year. Despite the positive numbers for the week, there was a whole lot of sector rotation. The three sectors that lost ground were utilities, communication services, and technology, of all things.
Yeah. Well, you know, when it's overvalued, it's overvalued.
Exactly. Industrials were really strong, posting gains over 3%. Energy and consumer discretionary were both up more than 2%. So you can kind of see what's happening there with money flowing out of technology and into sectors that have not done as well this year. So bargain hunting is what I call it. Small caps, mid caps, and value stocks all outperformed as well. And again, that just speaks to looking for value, looking for bargains. The sectors that have been have taken out their pre-COVID highs so far are communication services, consumer discretionary, healthcare, tech, and materials. And coincidentally, or not so much, those were the sectors that did not do as well this week. So kind of a little bit of a pattern forming in August, but we'll see if it continues into next week.
A little preferential shift going on out there.
We saw the same kind of thing around the world, with Hong Kong, Russia, and Mexico all posting over 4% gains. Spain, Italy, and Japan had gains over 2%. All of those countries are still down year to date. So again, that just speaks to people out buying up things that have not recovered to their post-COVID highs.
There's only eight countries whose stock markets are positive for the year so far, and two of them are in the Balkans, which is not saying much from a value standpoint because their markets are very small. But it's very interesting when you see the change coming. It looks to me like international is right at the what I would have to call a very interesting buy point.
Yeah, and we've been shifting some money into international. Yep. So I would tend to agree with that. Gold and silver both posted weekly drops for 4.4% and 6.7% respectively. But again, those have been up pretty big in the quarter and also for the year, so not really surprising considering the trend that we're seeing. Yeah. Natural gas had another strong week, up 4%, and oil posted a weekly gain of 1.5%. So,
hovering just over 42, which is still a little low, but man, what a difference in a couple of months.
Huh? I don't know. I kind of feel like it's a little high. There's still a lot of oil that is not being produced and sitting around doing nothing in storage right now. So.
Yep.
The bond market took a bit of a beating this week, too, with long treasuries down 3.8%.
This was inevitable.
Exactly. This was a direct response to the yield curve steepening, which happened kind of dramatically this week. The yield on the 10-year rose from under 0.6 on Monday to over 0.7 on Friday. And I know that doesn't sound like much, but trust me, that's weekly move.
Yep.
And it's significant. So,
what does it mean to you folks out there? It means if you're looking to get a mortgage, look real fast.
That and also, you might be able, the financials are going to be the big benefactor if that continues to happen. So
if you've rotated out of financials, I think it's a good time to look at them. And floating rate funds, loan funds, things like that.
It's happening sooner than what I would have thought, too. Okay. I did not expect to see that this week. It could be a false start.
But look what's happening. The supply is not there for the demand level. But there's a shortage of homes, and that's going to bid up a lot of things,
including money.
Yeah,
that's fair. Earnings season has gone better than just about anyone predicted, including us.
And better than almost any earnings season I've ever seen.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Time I've ever seen.
The earnings beat rate remains above 70%, which is outstanding. And even better than that is the revenue beat rate, which is at 65%. Mm-hmm. The best number of the season, which is actually neither of those, is forward guidance, which is hovering at a level of 26.1%.
And just for point of reference, it's usually just a little bit negative.
Yeah, or right around zero is very
zero
typical.
Plus or minus.
So to be up 26%, that means just an overwhelming majority of companies are giving forward guidance, which is positive rather than negative. So companies are upbeat about next quarter.
They are. And if you understand that the CEOs of these companies that are held publicly are subject to Regulation FD, which is full disclosure, if they get too overzealous and report to the public that they're expecting great results and they don't hit it, the SEC looks very, very unkindly on giving that kind of information because it's seen to be self-serving in the hopes of driving your stock price higher. So if I were a CEO and were in any of these positions, as these guys are, I would do what they've done over the last few years, which would be very conservative. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888, which I actually did this week. And shortly thereafter, I saw him and he fixed a little problem for me. So that's called reaction.
Good
deal. Wonderful. All right, here's the question. We all know, pretty much, if you live on planet Earth, that Elon Musk owns a good share of the Tesla company, and he's been a little upset with the state of California lately for reasons that are just so understandable. So he decided he's going to build a mega factory in Texas. So he recently purchased some land in the Austin area, a lot of land, and apparently this is going to be some kind of factory. But anyway, I want to know how much per acre did Elon Musk pay for the land in Texas on which to put his factory?
How big is it? How many acres?
It's about 2,000 acres, but I want the per acre price.
Yep.
Good morning, George.
Good morning. Based on the coming election, which if it is Biden, it will probably affect tech taxes. Is it a good time now to sell IRAs or convert IRA into Roth or what?
There's a difference in those two.
Yeah, definitely. But I like what you're thinking.
Yes, me too. And yes, I think the Roth conversion is a very good thing to look at. The answer will be different for every person because it's dependent on your financial situation and so on. But yes, we are looking at a lot of Roth conversions for our clients right as we speak. We've done a few already and we're starting some more.
Yep. And it's not even just because of the election. No. It's just a good time regardless of who wins in November because the tax rates are at historic lows.
And the other thing that's unique about the year 2020 is that required minimum distributions have been put on hold for a whole year. So people who are taking money from a taxable retirement account normally because they have to for the required minimums don't have to do it this year. So we're looking at some of those people saying, well, maybe this is the year to take what you would be paying out anyway and pay it out to your Roth IRA and you'll still have it around and your tax situation will not be any different this year than it would have been last year, or it would have been with the RMDs this year, but you will have then reduced your burden down the line by having a bigger Roth and a lower taxable account. So yeah, there's many, many reasons to look at that right now, but none of them to me really have anything to do with the election.
Are there any age restrictions on converting to Roth?
No.
Nope.
None at all. And there are never any required minimums as long as you own the account. There will be if somebody inherits it in the form of a Roth IRA, but not for you ever. So it's a win-win situation to get that done this particular year.
So, yeah, that's right. There shouldn't be any age-related. Is there a penalty if you do it before age 50?
No, because it's waived for the conversion. So, yeah, you can convert any amount at any time as far as I know. So, yes, your thinking is dead right. I just would not predicate my decisions on election results at this point in time. Now, we might get a little closer to November 3rd and maybe have a second look at it, so keep in touch with us.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen in November yet.
Oh, no.
It's really up in the air.
The way I look at it, the election cycle started about Wednesday of this week. I know we've been following it for a long time.
I remember.
But nobody cares.
I got really annoyed on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Nobody really cares except those of us who are news junkies prior to everything getting ready for the conventions. But it's going to start full time now with both conventions coming up in whatever form they take. And that's when people will get interested. And that's when the polls will start to reflect the true sentiment in the country. So it's a bit early. We're telling everybody we'll start really paying attention sometime in maybe early October. So like I said, keep in touch. But yeah, if you want to talk about that conversion, absolutely, it's a perfect time to do so.
One other question.
Sure.
If next year they decide to increase the taxes, they can't do it retro back to this year.
Oh, wrong-o. You remember a name, William Jefferson Blythe Clinton?
Did he do that?
He invented the retroactive tax increase. Yes, he did. Amazing, isn't it?
So we got that to worry about then.
Yeah, somehow. That clause in the Constitution about no ex post facto laws doesn't seem to apply to taxes.
Well, hopefully even... I mean, hopefully that wouldn't happen, but it's possible.
We got even. George W. Bush reduced taxes retroactively.
That's right.
So the
got a $400 rebate or something like that.
You know, I'm reminded of Barack Obama's famous quote that said, "Elections have consequences." Remember that one?
Yeah.
So if you vote correctly this time, who knows? Maybe we'll get a retroactive tax decrease.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
When you get done laughing, call us again. Oh, thanks, man. All right. Have we answered your question sufficiently for now?
Yes, sir.
You want to take a shot at what Elon's paying for land in Texas per
I'd
acre?
Say, $200 an acre.
And I will say you are way low, but even in Texas.
I guessed about the
Adam
same.
Adam guessed so, you right yeah. in that neighborhood, too, and I told him he was way low.
I thought he might have gotten a big tax break to do it.
See, but everybody would expect that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I always like to have these questions that have a point to them, and I do have a point on this one, too. All right, we appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that is true, and we could talk from now to the end of the year just about Roth conversions in the year 2020.
Yeah.
But if you're ever thinking about them, I can't think of a better time to discuss it.
Unless you're having, the reasons it wouldn't make sense is if you're having a really big income year mm-hmm. and you're already in one of the higher brackets, and even then, depending on what you think is going to happen next year, it might make some sense, but it mm-hmm. makes less sense the more the higher tax bracket you're in.
Yeah, and if you're one of those people who can, to a certain extent, control your income, like if you're self-employed
right.
and you forget to do any billing in December and you do it in January instead, you can postpone income. Cutting back this year's leaving more room available for that Roth conversion to still stay in the tax bracket you're trying to keep yourself in. So these are problems that when we get a call like that or a person in the office who's talking about it, that's how to make your financial planner's day, ask questions like that. It gets really exciting. All right, anyway, back to I wanted you to mention what happened in the 100 days.
I will. There was a few other things I wanted to go over, but I do have that. So Thursday marked 100 days since the COVID crash bottom. So in that time, the stock market rallied 51.3%. That's the first time it has been up more than 50% in 100 days since 1933. Pretty incredible.
Pretty incredible. Yeah. And it's 10 times it's gone up more than 33%, I think. And every time the S&P kept going up for quite a while after that. So it's a bullish sign if you believe in history.
That's right, which is the only real thing we have to look at, but it is not a guarantee of future results.
Absolutely true.
So I want to talk a little bit about economic data, and specifically I wanted to talk about the retail sales report. If you watch the news, and I know you all are going to be shocked by this, but they said it was bad, really bad. It missed the target. Yeah. So obviously the expectation was for an increase of 2.1, and the report showed a really, really marginal 1.2% increase.
Now, yeah, it's just dyslexic.
In any other month, that would be a really good headline number on the retail sales report. But because the expectation was for 2.1, everyone said huge disappointment.
And what didn't they tell us?
Well, they forgot to mention that June was revised up by almost 1%.
Which brings us to what?
That now
2.1.
That's right. And then also that the overall trend now shows that U.S. retail sales have fully recovered from the COVID crash, and they are at a new all-time high. A new all-time high. Can you? Yeah. Aren't we supposed to be in the middle of a economic crisis?
Apparently.
So we also have a call.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, fellas. That's right south of Austin, so that's not inexpensive land.
That is true.
We do land work in Texas, and it's seldom that high. It's $46,190, $46,000 an acre, and $190 on top for the.
I had it just a little bit higher, but you're well within the bracket.
Yeah, I'll give them that. That's good.
46 grand an acre. And again, I said I'd always like to have a reason for bringing these up. And my reason is that there is a specific reason that he wanted to be in a specific place. And when Elon Musk wants something, Elon Musk gets it.
No kidding. Also, can you imagine when he was running the numbers versus California, how expensive does California have to be to make $46,000 an acre look good?
Yeah. And think of the operating expense he's going to save.
It's the taxes on that. And, he doesn't run a car company. He runs a subsidy company because the taxpayers pay for everything.
Fair enough.
Yep. So far, so. And I think it will change over time. The popularity curve is changing for him very quickly. But he also has a big presence in Texas on the space area, and And there were reasons to go there, many reasons. All right, we appreciate it.
All the way down south.
Yeah.
On the Gulf Coast there.
Yep, yep. Absolutely true. All right, I'm going to put you on hold now, and I'll get your name and address, and we appreciate the call. Yeah, 40, high 40s, thousands per acre. That is absolutely amazing, isn't it? For 2,000 acres? Wow. All right, we'll be right back after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we had a trivia winner, but I have a backup question. Did you know, and you're probably going to argue with me, that this is VJ Day celebration 75 years ago? Now, a lot of you sitting out there are going to say, I've slept since then, but there's more to the story. How many dates are VJ Day celebrated? Victory in Japan. That means the end of World War II. Okay. For those of you who are young.
I have no idea.
Well, we'll see if anybody else does. It's kind of an interesting answer. And they're kind of an interesting reason, too. Anyway, we were talking about the retail sales having come all the way back.
I had one other thing about that.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so the other thing was that the very common way, there's three ways that people look at the retail sales number. And the one is to look at the headline number, which is the one you'll see on the news. Mm-hmm. And then one is to strip out gas.
Yeah.
And one is to strip out gas and automobiles. Because
right.
those two tend to bounce around a lot and kind of skew the report more than they should.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at the X autos and gas, it actually the number actually beat by a pretty good margin, so about 50%. So
but you won't hear that.
No, it was actually a very, very strong report. But of course, the market, I think the futures were down that day, so they used that as an excuse as to why the market was going down.
This is the reason you have to listen to this show to get the truth. All right, here's what happened in the media after the retail sales number was published and was so disappointing. It only said that we have set an all-time record high, but they didn't care about that. In the mainstream media, and I'll credit or debit Market Watch for most of this, our little furry friends in New York who are so liberal, CDC director warns America is in for the, quote, worst fall we've ever had.
By what metric?
Well, that was the headline. And a page down, the actual story was there, and I'm going to quote that same line from the body of the article. CDC director warns America is in for the worst autumn we've ever had.
But again, by what metric?
Yeah.
Different, sort of different wording.
But why would somebody pull a headline out of there and quote it except for one word changing autumn to fall? Could it be they're trying to mislead the public who was reading that?
Well, yeah, especially on a stock related page.
That's, yeah,
exactly. That's pretty bad.
And another one: U.S. stocks fall early Friday amid retail sales disappointment and doubt over congressional corona relief. Okay, doubt over corona relief. Okay, well, there's no doubt Nancy Pelosi ain't going to do it. Period. That's no doubt. All right, next one. Stocks could be melting up like they did in the roaring 20s, strategist says. We all know what happened next. U.S. retail sales climbed 1.2% in July and returned to pre-crisis levels, but growth is slowing.
Oh, that we didn't maintain the 10%
no.
retail sales growth we saw 3 months ago? Shocking.
Consumer sentiment remains down in the dumps in August, and pessimism reigns. So we're also pessimistic that we're spending world record amounts of money. I should I ascribe a motive to these? Oh, I don't think I have to do that. You know, the audience and talk radio is the smartest people in the country.
Let's.
I trust you all know exactly what's going on.
Let's flip over to some decent news.
Yeah, instead. I agree.
So this week was the first time that weekly jobless claims fell to below 1 million since the pandemic hit. And so that's exciting. And then even more exciting is that Florida's weekly jobless claims dropped the most of any state.
I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, it's
cool.
That's true. Some 55,106 Floridians filed for unemployment benefits last week, a decline of over 23,000 claims.
Wow.
Yeah.
Percentage-wise, that's huge. And numerically,
really?
It's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent. I wonder what the net is now.
Last week, Florida had the third highest number of claims after California and Georgia. So,
and the total ongoing claims dropped again from 16 million plus to 15.4,
yeah,
I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Which means that for all the 960,000 or so that filed new claims, all of those plus another few hundred thousand went back to work. So we're gaining on the overall problem, although it is still horrible, we're gaining on it. And you can't right a ship that turned all the way over overnight. Just look at that one that's still stuck in the bay. It'll tell you that. So all in all, I would say that if this pace keeps up, and of course there are people out there fighting it every day, if this pace keeps up, you're going to see some real swings in the polling and in the consumer sentiment in the country, because it's getting better and better and better.
Yep. I wanted to talk a little bit about stock splits again, because Apple's Apple's stock
split. A couple of big announcements.
Yeah, they've announced a 4-for-1 split. It's going to happen at the end of this month, at August 31st. So we were wondering how does that affect the Dow Jones Industrial Average and Apple's influence on it? And the answer is substantially, and in a way that makes absolutely no sense, because as I've always told you week after week, the Dow Jones makes no sense because it's price weighted, and that is a system that does not, there's no, it does, logically,
we've
it just
always
doesn't
done
work
it this
yeah,
way.
Exactly. But my young assistant asked me, I had her research this for me, and she asked, well, why do they do that? And I said, the only thing I could think of to say is because it's always done that way.
I was kind of being facetious, but not exactly.
No, I couldn't
think
of
reason
a single other answer. And so the index was founded on February 16th of 1885, and then it was refounded on May 26th of 1896 as the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And so
when would it have been about 16 or 18 stocks, I think, at the time?
I have an article here, but I'm not sure.
It was a lot less than the 30 that it has now, and 30 is minimal.
Okay.
If you're trying to make an index out of 30, it's not easy.
No, it's not ideal.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Excellent. And you?
Hanging in there.
Good. What's happening?
Well, we're talking about VJ Day, correct?
Yep.
I believe it was also known, being a minor history major in Brooklyn College.
All right.
It was also known as VP Day.
Victory in the Pacific?
In the Pacific.
Yep.
And I believe the Japanese recognize it on August 15th.
Uh-huh.
And we recognize it on August 14th because of the time difference.
Yep, exactly.
And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I recall, they also celebrated on September 2nd when the actual surrender was signed.
Well, the good news is we have a winner. The bad news is you didn't win anything except good job.
No problem with that.
But that's actually, that's amazing that you remembered all three of those dates.
That's excellent. Well, they're very meaningful.
Kind of a history buff. I wish more of my fellow Americans remember history.
No kidding.
On what's going on these days.
Yep.
Quick question, if I may.
Of course.
All right. I go to there's a gym called The Gym. It's on Beach Boulevard in San Pablo. And when I talk to my fellow workout people, when we talk about the coming election, there's quite a few of them that are of the opinion that should, and I shudder the thought, should the Biden-Harris team win, that some are actually saying they would consider really seriously pulling their money out of the market, and that the market will go down significantly. And obviously, President Trump says the same. And I was just wondering if I could get a quick opinion from you gentlemen.
Quick opinion? I'm not sure. Opinion, yeah. Yes.
So the answer is nobody knows. But you can certainly speculate that that might happen. But there's a couple of things you have to remember. People always over assign the importance of the president and their power over the stock market.
Exactly.
And so if you look at history, it would say that the market goes up under both parties. And there really isn't many exceptions to that. And the fact is we have a system of checks and balances in place that tends to lead to gridlock, which is actually the best thing for the stock market. Businesses want to be left alone to make money and not be interfered with by the government.
The answer to this is largely predicated on who controls the House and or the Senate. If the legislative branches are divided, you've got a completely different scenario than if they are together. If they control all three of them, we got to run because the music's playing, but right after this break, I'm going to give you the best and worst case scenarios for those. We appreciate the call, and call back anytime, but keep listening, please. All right, be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. And let Troy do it. All right, we had a question right before the break about the election and some people who are so nervous that they're thinking about getting out of the market if it happens. And my comment on that is never react to something that just happened unless it's, you know, a bomb goes off over Tel Aviv or something like that. I'd react so fast you wouldn't believe it. But this election is still a long ways away. And as it gets closer, the polls will firm up, and the feeling, the mood of the country will change. And I would say to anybody who's thinking that it would be a total disaster that there are two scenarios. One is Biden with a divided Congress, and the other one is Biden with a controlled Congress. B is a lot scarier than A.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But I wouldn't wait to see if that happens. First off, it may not happen that night or even for a little while, although I'm not really counting on that part. But if we get a couple weeks from the election and there are people out there who are genuinely nervous based on what they see out there and what they think will happen after, I would not get out of the market after the election. I would get out before the election a couple weeks. Now just sit there and watch. If you're right, the market might go down, but it might go up. You never know. But I say the downside, if the market reaction to something like that is very severe, the downside will be sharp, and it'll have to claw back. But the upside isn't going to be that high, whether or not it happens, because we're already at a good high level. So you're de-risking a little bit that way. You might lose out on a 5% gain, but you might stop a 20 to 50% loss. But it's so speculative. Now, there's an article that I just read this morning that on its face sounds like an idiot wrote it. And it's the market would love a sweep, a Democrat sweep. Well, they made one cogent argument in there, and that is the market right now is not being buoyed up so much by earnings and that sort of thing and growth, although there's certainly not a headwind, but it's being buoyed up by all the money that's being thrown around by the Fed. And if that happens, the Democrat sweep, you are going to see money thrown into the economy like never before.
It is true.
And the market will most likely love it. So I could argue, put me on the debate team and give me a premise.
Yeah, I'm the same. I could draw up a pretty good argument either way. And
the one thing I wouldn't do is react to the actual results.
Yeah, it's so hard to say, but really do.
Yeah, talk about your sector thing. What we did with Trump.
Absolutely. There's going to be, so I did this before the Trump-Hillary election, and went sector by sector and tried to make predictions about what would do well under each. And I'll do that again as we get closer to the election. But there are certain sectors that you can just see where it would benefit and where it wouldn't. And I would say that healthcare, under a Biden presidency, I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, because if we nationalize health insurance, then you know the payouts are going to be lower, the profit will be gone. There's just so many negatives to that for the healthcare industry. There are positives, of course, for the social aspects of it, but the overall effect on the healthcare industry would be
negative.
Nobody's
going to make a profit.
Right. And because it would be controlled by the government setting prices. Yep. and payouts. So, but then if you look at tech, I don't really think that they would have any reason to fear a Biden-Harris
presidency. They love Democrats.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all liberals.
I think the big banks would do well because they have Hillary Clinton. They pay her $250,000 a pop to speak for her. So yeah. Or speak for them. So
and they own Biden. Credit card companies,
no doubt about
that kind of thing. They own him.
So it's hard to say exactly what the overall market would do, but you could go sector by sector and make some decent bets on what might happen.
Mm-hmm. And maybe if you were the type that wants to get out for a while and then you look at the results of the election, that would tell you right away where to buy back in. You could target your funds going back in, maybe pick up the ETF for financials and the ETF for whatever else is going to do it, technology and that sort of thing. But I don't think completely pulling out of the market would be smart. There are things that, in my opinion, can't be hurt, technology being the big one. I would just let that one ride.
Yeah, I have friends that did this when Trump got elected. And terribly, honestly. But they even said afterwards, man, I learned my lesson. You just can't, like, it just isn't, that's not how it works. And I know even you have made this mistake.
Back in 91,
And it's just not how the market works. And the president does not have direct control of the stock market. As much as Trump likes to claim victory, and other presidents too, but you always hear him saying, look at your 401ks. I did that. But no, he didn't. That's kind of a ridiculous statement. But that's, Obama did the same thing. So
of course.
It's part of the nature of being in charge. You get blamed or you get credit, whether or not you deserve it.
Yeah. So it's a topic that's on everybody's minds, every investor's mind, for sure. But it's not a truly answerable question because you can't really get in the minds of that many people.
Right.
For any one person, we can get inside there and discuss the pros and cons and their preferences and so on. So if you're dealing with a client, it's one thing. But when you're dealing with the market, you're talking about lots and lots of brains, lots and lots of money, lots and lots of philosophies, and on. It's so big collectively that no one person can influence it. So as I've said before, you go to war with the army you've got, you get into the market knowing that you have no control. The market will do what the market will do, and it's remarkably accurate, and it looks forward. So look where we are right now. We're under 3 months from the election. The market's usually 6 to 9 months ahead, and they're saying everything's going to be fine at this point. That's what I'm reading in it anyway.
Yep. So a little bit of, that's kind of our thoughts on it. We're going to talk a lot more about that in the coming months, I can assure you. So
it's a topic whose day will definitely be a long ways away for a conclusion anyway.
I wanted to finish up talking about Apple and the influence on the Dow. So with that stock split, Apple's weight in the Dow will go from 10% down to 2.7%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge drop. In fact, it's such a big drop that it reduces the weight of the tech sector in the Dow from 26.8% to 18.5%.
Thank goodness. It's gotten out of whack.
It has, but still, that is not a good reason for that sector to be reduced. Now, if you move Apple into a different sector, like they've done with some of the other tech stocks, that would make more sense. But this doesn't really make sense. But anyways, the Dow is any $1 move in a stock means about a 6.86-point swing in the Dow. And so to take away the Apple's influence on the Dow based on a stock split where their market cap is actually increasing right now, I mean, it's coming up on $2 trillion.
Yeah, very close.
And then
it wasn't that long ago they hit one.
Yeah, to lower that influence just makes no sense. And then to contrast that, Tesla announced a 5-for-1 split on August 31st. And they're in the S&P. Yeah. So what's the effect on the S&P? Zero. Because their market cap doesn't change based on the split. And that, to me, just makes a lot more sense. To reduce the importance of Apple because of simply their stock price, it's just crazy.
The bottom line here is that anybody who makes a lot of decisions based on the Dow, it might make you commonplace and fairly normal, but it's not the best indicator of what's happening.
Not.
No. So if you live your life by the Dow, you live by the Dow, you can die by the Dow.
It's true. And there are arguments against cap weighting, too, in the S&P because the big companies will sort of take over and the bottom 100 companies don't have as much influence as the top companies.
Well, if you want to do some research on that and look at the history and estimate the future with it, there are funds that have equal weighted S&P.
That's right. Yep.
They've got all the same stocks, but they give them equal weight, so they're not cap-weighted.
And there will be times when those will outperform the cap-weighted, and then times when they will underperform.
Yeah, you'll see those lines cross frequently over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. But it teaches you a little bit something about what you're looking at and looking for to understand how the indices differ from each other and why some days it'll look funny because S&P does fine, and the Dow doesn't. Sometimes the Dow just blows the top off of them, but the S&P is laggard. And it's because of the size and influence of some of these companies that make a really, really big difference. So that's, you know, those things are a little bit inside baseball, but it gets dangerous if you don't know enough to be dangerous. You can make some real serious mistakes on that. So as time goes on over the next few weeks, as Adam said, the whole thing about the election is going to take on added importance. And as much as you can try and try and try to not be politically oriented, this influences your money. Every single one of us is influenced every single day by what happens in politics. Knowing that, we'll see you next week. And thanks for listening. This is the Banway Financial Hour.